During my sabbatical in January, February, and March, three of our longtime church members died. Dottie Slater, Francis Stickles, and Mary Lois Williams. I wasn't here to share in remembering their lives, and so this morning I wanted to take just a moment to pause, to remember, and to give thanks for their lives. During that same time period, my father also died, a grief that has been far more with me than I ever imagined. And so I would like to light a candle in memory of each of those people. Dottie Slater, Francis Stickles, Mary Lois Williams, and Sid Tutt. Just prior to my sabbatical, during the months of November and December, several people connected with our congregation died. Nona Cox died in November. Rick Alfonso's father, Mike Weber's mother, and Leslie Weber's father. And so I light this candle in memory of those whose recent deaths remain with us. And then just as I was returning from my sabbatical, Dick Briceland died. I mentioned to you that my Aunt Margaret died. And so another candle in memory of those whose deaths have been more recent. We give thanks for these lives. We give thanks for all of those who live ahead of us into the eternity of time. We remember them, aware of the frailty of our own existence, and we remember that even in times of death and grief, we are not alone. God is with us. In the fall, as I was preparing to go on this sabbatical, a few of you asked me if I would be available during my sabbatical to come back for funerals. I had to say, no, I wouldn't be able to do that because then it wouldn't be a sabbatical. It wouldn't be time away. It would just be time sitting by the phone waiting for you to call. The good news, of course, is that Tom Linhart served as our sabbatical minister. He knew those church members who died and was able to offer kind care to those who were dying and to their family members. And so I'm so appreciative for Tom's pastoral presence. But that raised an interesting question for me. What would it look like for church members to take care of burying other church members? Janet Moyer does a great job as our funeral coordinator, and we had good clergy leadership during the sabbatical time, but how does a church bury the dead without paying people to do that? How does a church bury the dead on its own? As I said last Sunday, and as I have said often over the past few years, religious life in America is changing. We're entering, or we're living in this post-Christian time, as scholars call it. I pointed out last week that fewer people are attending church services, and those who are attending church services are attending less frequently, and more Americans are happy saying that their spiritual lives are rich and meaningful without taking part in a church or mosque or synagogue or temple. There are writers predicting the death of the American church. I don't think that's the right language at all. But I do think that religious life, church patterns and practices are changing. Attendance is declining. And by the way, this is not a Westmoreland thing or a DC thing or a city thing or an East Coast thing. These trends are the same in the South and in California and in the Northeast, in small towns, big cities, Catholic, Protestant, liberal, evangelical. The church is changing all across the board. Attendance is declining, giving patterns are changing. Fewer people are giving, and newer givers are giving in smaller amounts and in different ways. And that's true from Houston, Texas, to Houlton, Maine, to Holden, Missouri, to Honolulu, Hawaii. At the same time, as attendance is declining and as giving is declining, the cost of seminary education for clergy is more expensive. And the cost of healthcare for clergy, just like the cost of healthcare for everybody, is increasing. And things like repairs and property insurance for church buildings are going up. The American Protestant Church, over the past 100 years or so, has bought into this corporate model of a trained professional paid clergy who does things like officiate at funerals. As I think about the changes in American religious life, I'm not so sure that our current model for church is sustainable. Now, I may be wrong, and in 100 years, when the facts say otherwise, come talk to me. But I think the American Protestant Church in 100 years, or maybe just in 50 years, will be very different from what the American church is today. And so we live in this interesting time of change for churches. We live in this interesting time of change, which is very complicated for churches. Who knows quite how it will play out? But a far more interesting question to me than how it will eventually play out is, how do we live in changing times? How do we navigate change? How do we live into an unknown future? I mentioned in part one of this sermon that my father died. And I've mentioned that my mother is in a nursing facility and our childhood home is for sale. What I was not prepared for is the tremendous change all of that stirred up for me and my family. For all of my life, we've gathered for meals and celebrations and holidays around this giant table in my parents' dining room. And my parents have always been there. And that has changed. How do we live in changing times? How do we navigate into a new reality? Those are the same questions that we as a church need to ask. How do we as a church live in changing times? Do we just give up? The picture on the bulletin cover is of a beautiful statue in a cemetery not far from my hometown in East Texas. The angel in that statue has given up, it appears, in the face of death, just collapsed in the face of death. Is that what we do? Do we plan a funeral for the church and fall down in our grief and then maybe get up and go play golf on Sundays? Or do we conjure up that grand old Protestant work ethic and say, well, by golly, we should just work harder. Do more of the same things we've always done, and dadgummit, something's bound to happen. Even if our knuckles are bleeding and our souls are dry, let's just work harder. Or do we find other ground and say, you know, some of the things we've always done, maybe we don't need to do those anymore. Maybe we let some things go by the wayside. And some things we've never thought about doing, maybe we should do those things. Maybe we should focus not so much on all of the busyness, but on the depth of meaning that Christianity has to offer. As we navigate this change, do we think creatively, imaginatively, and proactively? As I said, this is a sermon preached in three parts. The first part about death. This second part is about change. The sermon preached in three voices, the preacher, the organist, and that still small voice of the Spirit within you. What does that inner voice say to you about living in a time of change, about being a Christian in a changing religious world? How do we live in changing times? How do we navigate a changing world?